The Sworn Sword, a tale of the Seven Kingdoms. In an iron cage at the crossroads, two dead men were rotting in the summer sun. Egg stopped below to have a look at them. Who do you think they were, sir? His mule, Maester, grateful for the respite, began to crop the dry brown devil grass along the verges, heedless of the two huge wine casks on his back. Robbers, Dunk said. Mounted atop Thunder, he was much closer to the dead men. Rapers, murderers. Dark circles stained his old green tunic under both arms. The sky was blue and the sun was blazing hot, and he had sweated gallons since breaking camp this morning. Egg took off his wide-brimmed floppy straw hat. Beneath, his head was bald and shiny. He used the hat to fan away the flies. There were hundreds crawling on the dead men, and more drifting lazily through the still hot air. It must have been something bad for them to be left to die inside a crow cage. Sometimes Egg could be as wise as any maester, but other times he was still a boy of 10. There are lords and lords, Dunk said. Some don't need much reason to put a man to death. The iron cage was barely big enough to hold one man, yet two had been forced inside it. They stood face to face with their arms and legs in a tangle and their backs against the hot black iron of the bars. One had tried to eat the other, gnawing at his neck and shoulder. The crows had been at both of them. When Dunk and Egg had come around the hill, the birds had risen like a black cloud, so thick that Maester spooked. Whoever they were, they look half-starved, Dunk said. Skeletons in skin, and the skin is green and rotting. Might be they stole some bread, or poached a deer in some lord's wood. With the drought entering its second year, most lords had become less tolerant of poaching, and they hadn't been very tolerant to begin with. It could be they were in some outlaw band. At dusk, they'd heard a harper sing the day they hanged Black Robin. Ever since, Egg had been seeing gallant outlaws behind every bush. Dunk had met a few outlaws while squiring for the old man. He was in no hurry to meet any more. None of the ones he'd known had been especially gallant. He remembered one outlaw, Sir Arlan had helped hang, who'd been fond of stealing rings. He would cut off a man's fingers to get at them, but with women, he preferred to bite. There were no songs about him that Dunk knew. Outlaws or poachers makes no matter. Dead men make poor company. He walked Thunder slowly around the cage. The empty eyes seemed to follow him. One of the dead men had his head down and his mouth gaping open. He has no tongue, Dunk observed. He supposed the crows might have eaten it. Crows always pecked a corpse's eyes out first, he had heard, but maybe the tongue went second. Or maybe a lord had torn it out for something that he said. Dunk pushed his fingers through his mop of sun-streaked hair. The dead were beyond his help, and they had casks of wine to get to Standfast. "Which way did we come?" he asked, looking from one road to the other. "I'm turned around." "Standfast is that way, sir," Egg pointed. "That's for us, then. We could be back by evenfall, but not if we sit here all day counting flies." He touched Thunder with his heels and turned the big destrier toward the left-hand fork. Egg put his floppy hat back on and tugged sharply at Maester's lead. The mule left off cropping at the devil grass and came along without an argument for once. He's hot as well, Dunk thought, and those wine casks must be heavy. The summer sun had baked the road as hard as brick. Its ruts were deep enough to break a horse's leg, so Dunk was careful to keep Thunder to the higher ground between them. He had twisted his own ankle the day they left Dusk, walking in the black of night when it was cooler. A knight had to learn to live with aches and pains, the old man used to say. Aye, lad, and with broken bones and scars. They're as much a part of knighthood as your swords and shields. If Thunder was to break a leg, though, well, a knight without a horse was no knight at all. Egg followed 5 yards behind him with Maester and the wine casks. The boy was walking with one bare foot in a rut and one out, so he rose and fell with every step. His dagger was sheathed on one hip, his boots slung over his backpack, his ragged brown tunic rolled up and knotted around his waist. Beneath his wide-brimmed straw hat, his face was smudged and dirty, his eyes large and dark. He was 10, not quite 5 feet tall. Of late, he had been sprouting fast, though he had a long way to grow before he'd be catching up to Dunk. He looked just like the stable boy he wasn't, and not at all like who he really was. The dead men soon disappeared behind them, but Dunk found himself thinking about them, all the same. The realm was full of lawless men these days. The drought showed no signs of ending, and small folk by the thousands had taken to the roads looking for some place where the rain still fell. Lord Bloodraven had commanded them to return to their own lands and lords, but few obeyed. Many blamed Bloodraven and King Aerys for the drought. It was a judgment from the gods, they said, for the Kinslayer is accursed. If they were wise, though, they did not say it loudly. How many eyes does Lord Bloodraven have? Ran the riddle Egg had heard in Old Town. 1,000 eyes and 1. 6 years ago, in King's Landing, Dunk had seen him with his own 2 eyes as he rode a pale horse up the Street of Steel with 50 raven's teeth behind him. That was before King Aerys had ascended to the Iron Throne and made him the Hand, but even so he cut a striking figure, garbed in smoke and scarlet, with Dark Sister on his hip. His pallid skin and bone-white hair made him look like a living corpse. Across his cheek and chin spread a wine-stained birthmark that was supposed to resemble a red raven, though Dunk only saw an odd-shaped blotch of discolored skin. He stared so hard that Bloodraven felt it. The king's sorcerer had turned to study him as he went by. He had 1 eye, and that one red. The other was an empty socket, the gift Bittersteel had given him upon the red grass field. Yet it seemed to Dunk that both eyes had looked right through his skin, down to his very soul. Despite the heat, the memory made him shiver. "Sir," Egg called, "are you unwell?"
"No," said Dunk, "I'm as hot and thirsty as them."
He pointed toward the field beyond the road, where rows of melons were shriveling on the vines. Along the verges, goat heads and tufts of devil grass still clung to life, but the crops were not faring near as well. Dunk knew just how the melons felt. Sir Arlan used to say that no hedge knight need ever go thirsty. "Not so long as he has a helm to catch the rain in. Rainwater is the best drink there is, lad." The old man never saw summer like this one, though. Dunk had left his helm at Standfast. It was too hot and heavy to wear, and there had been precious little rain to catch in it. What's a hedge knight to do when even the hedges are brown and parched and dying? Maybe when they reached the stream he'd have a soak. He smiled, thinking how good that would feel, to jump right in and come up sopping wet and grinning, with water cascading down his cheeks and through his tangled hair and his tunic clinging sodden to his skin. Egg might want a soak as well, though the boy looked cool and dry, more dusty than sweaty. He never sweated much. He liked the heat. In Dawn he went about bare-chested and turned brown as a Dornishman. It is his dragon blood, Dunk told himself. Whoever heard of a sweaty dragon? He would gladly have pulled his own tunic off, but it would not be fitting. A hedge knight could ride bare-naked if he chose. He had no one to shame but himself. It was different when your sword was sworn. When you accept a lord's meat and mead, all you do reflects on him, Sir Arlan used to say. Always do more than he expects of you, never less. Never flinch at any task or hardship, and, above all, never shame the lord you serve. At Standfast, meat and mead meant chicken and ale, but Sir Eustace ate the same plain fare himself. Dunk kept his tunic on and sweltered. Sir Bennis of the Brown Shield was waiting at the old plank bridge.
"So, you come back," he called out. "You were gone so long I thought you'd run off with the old man's silver."
Bennis was sitting on his shaggy garron, chewing a wad of sour leaf that made it look as if his mouth were full of blood.
"We had to go all the way to Dosk to find some wine," Dunk told him. "The Krakens raided little Dosk. They carried off the wealth and women and burned half of what they did not take."
"That Dagon Greyjoy wants for hanging," Bennis said. "Aye, but who's to hang him? You see old Pinchbottom Pate?"
"They told us he was dead. The Iron Men killed him when he tried to stop them taking off his daughter."
"7 bloody hells!" Bennis turned his head and spat. "I seen that daughter once. Not worth dying for, you ask me. That fool Pate owed me half a silver."
The Brown Knight looked just as he had when they left,
Worse, he smelled the same as well. He wore the same garb every day, brown breeches, a shapeless rough-spun tunic, horsehide boots. When armored, he donned a loose brown surcoat over a shirt of rusted mail. His sword belt was a cord of boiled leather, and his seamed face might have been made of the same thing. His head looks like one of those shriveled melons that we passed. Even his teeth were brown, under the red stains left by the sour leaf he liked to chew. Amidst all that brownness, his eyes stood out. They were a pale green, squinty small, close-set, and shiny bright with malice.
"Only 2 casks," he observed. "Sir Useless wanted 4.
"We were lucky to find 2, said Dunk. "The drought reached the arbor, too. We heard the grapes are turning into raisins on the vines, and the Iron Men have been pirating."
"Sir,"
Egg broke in,
"the water's gone."
Dunk had been so intent on Bennis that he hadn't noticed. Beneath the warped wooden planks of the bridge, only sand and stones remained. That's queer. The stream was running low when we left, but it was running. Bennis laughed. He had 2 sorts of laughs. Sometimes he cackled like a chicken, and sometimes he brayed louder than Egg's mule. This was his chicken laugh.
"Dried up while you was gone, I guess. A drought'll do that."
Dunk was dismayed. "Well, I won't be soaking now." He swung down to the ground. What's going to happen to the crops? Half the wells in the reach had gone dry, and all the rivers were running low, even the Blackwater Rush and the Mighty Mander.
"Nasty stuff, water," Bennis said. "Drank some once, and it made me sick as a dog. Wine's better."
"Not for oats, not for barleycorn, not for carrots, onions, cabbages. Even grapes need water."
Dunk shook his head.
"How could it go dry so quick? We've only been 6 days. Wasn't much water in there to start with, Dunk. Time was, I could piss me bigger streams than this one."
"Not Dunk," said Dunk. "I told you that." He wondered why he bothered. Bennis was a mean-mouthed man, and it pleased him to make mock.
"I'm called Sir Duncan the Tall."
"By who? You bald pup."
He looked at Egg and laughed his chicken laugh.
"You're taller than when you did for Penny Tree, but you still look a proper Dunk to me."
Dunk rubbed the back of his neck and stared down at the rocks.
"What should we do?"
"Fetch home the wines and tell Sir Useless his stream's gone dry. The Standfast well still draws, he won't go thirsty."
"Don't call him Useless."
Dunk was fond of the old knight.
"You sleep beneath his roof. Give him some respect."
"You respect him for the both of us, Dunk," said Bennis. "I'll call him what I will."
The silvery grey planks creaked heavily as Dunk walked out onto the bridge to frown down at the sand and stones below. A few small brown pools glistened amongst the rocks he saw, none larger than his hand.
"Dead fish, there and there, see?"
The smell of them reminded him of the dead men at the crossroads.
"I see them, sir," said Egg.
Dunk hopped down to the stream bed, squatted on his heels and turned over a stone. Dry and warm on top, moist and muddy underneath.
"The water can't have been gone long."
Standing, he flicked the stone sidearm at the bank where it crashed through a crumbling overhang in a puff of dry brown earth.
"The soil's cracked along the banks, but soft and muddy in the middle. Those fish were alive yesterday."
"Dunk the Lunk, Penny Tree used to call you, I recall."
Sir Bennis spat a wad of sour leaf onto the rocks. It glistened red and slimy in the sunlight.
"Lunks shouldn't try and think. Their heads is too bloody thick for such."
Dunk the Lunk, thick as a castle wall. From Sir Erlan, the words had been affectionate. He had been a kindly man, even in his scolding. In the mouth of Sir Bennis of the Brown Shield, they sounded different.
"Sir Erlan's 2 years dead," Dunk said, "and I'm called Sir Duncan the Tall."
He was sorely tempted to put his fist through the brown knight's face and smash those red and rotten teeth to splinters. Bennis of the Brown Shield might be a nasty piece of work, but Dunk had a good 1.5 feet on him, and 4 stone as well. He might be a Lunk, but he was big. Sometimes it seemed as though he'd thumped his head on half the doors in Westeros, not to mention every beam in every inn from dawn up to the neck. Egg's brother Aemon had measured him in Old Town and found he lacked 1 inch of 7 feet, but that was 1/2 a year ago. He might have grown since. Growing was the one thing that Dunk did really well, the old man used to say. He went back to Thunder and mounted up again.
Egg, get on back to Standfast with the wine. I'm going to see what's happened to the water.
Streams dry up all the time, said Bennis.
I just want to have a look.
Like how you looked under that rock. Shouldn't go turning over rocks, Lunk. Never know what might crawl out. We got us nice straw pallets back at Standfast. There's eggs, more days than not, and not much to do, but listen to Sir Useless go on about how great he used to be. Leave it be, I say. The stream went dry, that's all.
Dunk was nothing if not stubborn. Sir Eustace is waiting on his wine, he told Egg. Tell him where I went.
I will, sir.
Egg gave a tug on Maester's lead. The mule twitched his ears but started off again at once. He wants to get those wine casks off his back. Dunk could not blame him. The stream flowed north and east when it was flowing, so he turned Thunder south and west. He had not ridden a dozen yards before Bennis caught him.
I best come see you don't get hanged.
He pushed a fresh sour leaf into his mouth.
Pass that clump of sand willows. The whole right bank is spider land.
I'll stay on our side. Dunk wanted no trouble with the lady of the cold moat. At Standfast, he heard ill things of her. The Red Widow, she was called, for the husband she had put into the ground. Old Sam Stoops said she was a witch, a poisoner, and worse. 2 years ago, she had sent her knights across the stream to seize an Osprey man for stealing sheep. When my lord rode to Colmoat to demand him back, he was told to look for him at the bottom of the moat, Sam had said. She'd sewn poor Dake in a bag of rocks and sunk him. 'Twas after that Sir Eustace took Sir Bennis into service to keep them spiders off his lands.
Thunder kept a slow, steady pace beneath the broiling sun. The sky was blue and hard, with no hint of cloud anywhere to be seen. The course of the stream meandered around rocky knolls and forlorn willows, through bare brown hills and fields of dead and dying grain. An hour upstream from the bridge, they found themselves riding on the edge of the small Osprey forest called Watts Wood. The greenery looked inviting from afar and filled Dunk's head with thoughts of shady glens and chuckling brooks, but when they reached the trees, they found them thin and scraggly, with drooping limbs. Some of the great oaks were shedding leaves, and half the pines had turned as brown as Sir Bennis, with rings of dead needles girdling their trunks. Worse and worse, thought Dunk. One spark, and this will all go up like tinder. For the moment, though, the tangled underbrush along the Checky Water was still thick with thorny vines, nettles, and tangles of briarwhite and young willow. Rather than fight through it, they crossed the dry stream bed to the cold moat side, where the trees had been cleared away for pasture. Amongst the parched brown grasses and faded wild flowers, a few black-nosed sheep were grazing.
"Never knew an animal stupid as a sheep," Sir Bennis commented. "Think they're kin to you, Lunk?"
When Dunk did not reply, he laughed his chicken laugh again. Half a league farther south, they came upon the dam. It was not large, as such things went, but it looked strong. 2 stout wooden barricades had been thrown across the stream from bank to bank, made from the trunks of trees with the bark still on. The space between them was filled with rocks and earth and packed down hard. Behind the dam the flow was creeping up the banks and spilling off into a ditch that had been cut through Lady Webber's fields. Dunk stood in his stirrups for a better look. The glint of sun on water betrayed a score of lesser channels, running off in all directions like a spider's web. They are stealing our stream. The sight filled him with indignation, especially when it dawned on him that the trees must surely have been taken from Watts Wood.
"See what you went and did, Lunk," said Bennis. "Couldn't have it that the stream dried up, no. Might be this starts with water, but it'll end with blood. Yours and mine, most like."
The brown knight drew his sword.
"Well, no help for it now. There's your thrice-damned diggers. Best we put some fear in them."
He raked his garron with his spurs and galloped through the grass. Dunk had no choice but to follow. Sir Arlan's long sword rode his hip, a good straight piece of steel. If these ditch-diggers have a lick of sense, they'll run. Thunder's hooves kicked up clods of dirt. One man dropped his shovel at the sight of the oncoming knights, but that was all. There were a score of the diggers, short and tall, old and young, all baked brown by the sun. They formed a ragged line as Bennis slowed, clutching their spades and picks.
"This is cold moat land," one shouted.
"And that's an Osprey stream," Bennis pointed with his long sword.
"Who put that damned dam up?"
"Maester Serric made it," said one young digger.
"No,"
an older man insisted. The grey pup pointed some and said do this and do that, but it were us who made it. Then you can bloody well unmake it. The digger's eyes were sullen and defiant. One wiped the sweat off his brow with the back of his hand. No one spoke.
You lot don't hear so good, said Bennis. Do I need to lop me off an ear or two? Who's first?
This is Weberland. The old digger was a scrawny fellow, stooped and stubborn.
You got no right to be here. Lop off any ears and m'lady will drown you in a sack.
Bennis rode closer.
Don't see no ladies here, just some mouthy peasant.
He poked the digger's bare brown chest with the point of his sword, just hard enough to draw a bead of blood. He goes too far.
Put up your steel, Dung warned him. This is not his doing. This maester set them to the task.
It's for the crop, sir, a jug-eared digger said. The wheat was dying, the maester said. The pear trees, too.
Well, maybe them pear trees die, or maybe you do.
Your talk don't frighten us, said the old man.
No.
Bennis made his long sword whistle, opening the old man's cheek from ear to jaw.
I said, them pear trees die, or you do.
The digger's blood ran red down one side of his face. He should not have done that. Dunk had to swallow his rage. Bennis was on his side in this.
Get away from here, he shouted at the diggers. Go back to your lady's castle.
Run,
Sir Bennis urged. Three of them let go of their tools and did just that, sprinting through the grass. But another man, sunburned and brawny, hefted a pick and said,
There's only two of them.
Shovels against swords is a fool's fight, Jorgen, the old man said, holding his face.
Blood trickled through his fingers.
This won't be the end of this. Don't think it will. One more word, and I might be the end of you.
We meant no harm to you, Dunk said, to the old man's bloody face. All we want is our water. Tell your lady that.
Oh, we'll tell her, sir,
promised the brawny man, still clutching his pick.
That we will.
On the way home, they cut through the heart of Watts Wood, grateful for the small measure of shade provided by the trees. Even so, they cooked. Supposedly there were deer in the wood, but the only living things they saw were flies. They buzzed about Dunk's face as he rode and crept around Thunder's eyes, irritating the big warhorse no end. The air was still, suffocating. At least in dawn the days were dry, and at night it grew so cold I shivered in my cloak. In the reach the nights were hardly cooler than the days, even this far north. When ducking down beneath an overhanging limb, Dunk plucked a leaf and crumpled it between his fingers. It fell apart like thousand-year-old parchment in his hand.
There was no need to cut that man, he told Bennis.
A tickle on the cheek was all it was, to teach him to mind his tongue. I should have cut his bloody throat for him, only then the rest would have run like rabbits, and we'd have had to ride down the lot of them.
You'd kill 20 men, Dunk said, incredulous.
22? That's 2 more than all your fingers and your toes, Lunk. You have to kill them all, else they go telling tales.
They circled round a deadfall.
We should have told Sir Eustace the drought dried up his little pissant stream.
Sir Eustace, you would have lied to him.
Aye, and why not? Who's to tell him any different? The flies!
Bennis grinned a wet red grin.
Sir Eustace never leaves the tower, except to see the boys down in the blackberries.
A sworn sword owes his lord the truth.
There's truths and truths, Lunk. Some don't serve,
he spat.
The gods make droughts. A man can't do a bloody buggering thing about the gods. The Red Widow, though. We tell Useless that bitch dog took his water. He'll feel honour bound to take it back. Wait and see. He'll think he's got to do something.
He should. Our small folk need that water for their crops.
Our small folk, Sir Bennis brayed his laughter. Was I off having a squat when Sir Useless made you his heir? How many small folk you figure you got? 10? And that's counting Squinty Jane's half-wit son that don't know which end of the axe to hold. Go make knights of every one, and we'll have half as many as the widow, and never mind her squires and her archers and the rest. You'd need both hands and both feet to count all them, and your bald-head boy's fingers and toes, too.
I don't need toes to count.
and false and craven. He put his heels into his horse and trotted on ahead to put the smell behind him.
Standfast was a castle only by courtesy. Though it stood bravely atop a rocky hill and could be seen for leagues around, it was no more than a tower house. A partial collapse a few centuries ago had required some rebuilding, so the north and west faces were pale grey stone above the windows and the old black stone below. Turrets had been added to the roofline during the repair, but only on the sides that were rebuilt. At the other two corners crouched ancient stone grotesques, so badly abraded by wind and weather that it was hard to say what they had been. The pinewood roof was flat, but badly warped and prone to leaks. A crooked path led from the foot of the hill up to the tower, so narrow it could only be ridden single file. Dunk led the way on the ascent with Bennis just behind. He could see Egg above them standing on a jut of rock in his floppy straw hat. They reined up in front of the little Daub and Wattle stable that nestled at the tower's foot, half hidden under a misshapen heap of purple moss. The old man's grey gelding was in one of the stalls next to Maester. Egg and Sam Stoops had gotten the wine inside, it seemed. Hens were wandering the yard. Egg trotted over.
"Did you find what happened to the stream?"
"The Red Widows dammed it up." Dunk dismounted and gave Thunder's reins to Egg. "Don't let him drink too much at once."
"No, sir, I won't."
"Boy!" Sir Bennis called. "You can take my horse as well."
Egg gave him an insolent look.
"I'm not your squire."
"That tongue of his will get him hurt one day," Dunk thought.
"You'll take his horse, or you'll get a clout in the ear."
Egg made a sullen face, but did as he was bid. As he reached for the bridle, though, Sir Bennis hawked and spat. A glob of glistening red phlegm struck the boy between two toes. He gave the brown knight an icy look.
"You spit on my foot, sir."
Bennis clambered to the ground.
"Aye, next time I'll spit in your face. I'll have none of your bloody tongue."
Dunk could see the anger in the boy's eyes.
"Tend to the horses, Egg," he said, before things got any worse. "We need to speak with Sir Eustace."
The only entrance into Standfast was through an oak and iron door 20 feet above them. The bottom steps were blocks of smooth black stone, so worn they were bowl-shaped in the middle. Higher up, they gave way to a steep wooden stair that could be swung up like a drawbridge in times of trouble. Dunk shooed the hens aside and climbed 2 steps at a time. Standfast was bigger than it appeared. Its deep vaults and cellars occupied a good part of the hill on which it perched. Above ground, the tower boasted 4 stories. The upper 2 had windows and balconies, the lower 2 only arrow slits. It was cooler inside, but so dim that Dunk had to let his eyes adjust. Sam Stoop's wife was on her knees by the hearth, sweeping out the ashes.
"Is Sir Eustace above or below?" Dunk asked her.
"Up, sir."
The old woman was so hunched that her head was lower than her shoulders.
"He's just come back from visiting the boys, down in the Blackberries."
The boys were Eustace Osgray's sons, Edwin, Harold, Adam. Edwin and Harold had been knights, Adam a young squire. They had died on the Redgrass Field 15 years ago, at the end of the Blackfyre Rebellion.
"They died good deaths, fighting bravely for the king," Sir Eustace told Dunk. "And I brought them home and buried them among the blackberries."
His wife was buried there as well. Whenever the old man breached a new cask of wine, he went down the hill to pour each of his boys a libation.
"To the king!"
he would call out loudly just before he drank. Sir Eustace's bedchamber occupied the 4th floor of the tower, with his solar just below. That was where he would be found, Dunk knew, puttering amongst the chests and barrels. The solar's thick grey walls were hung with rusted weaponry and captured banners, prizes from battles fought long centuries ago, and now remembered by no one but Sir Eustace. Half the banners were mildewed, and all were badly faded and covered with dust, their once bright colours gone to grey and green. Sir Eustace was scrubbing the dirt off a ruined shield with a rag when Dunk came up the steps. Bennis followed, fragrant at his heels. The old knight's eyes seemed to brighten a little at the sight of Dunk.
"My good giant," he declared, "and brave Sir Bennis, come have a look at this. I found it in the bottom of that chest, a treasure, though fearfully neglected."
It was a shield, or what remained of one. That was little enough. Almost half of it had been hacked away, and the rest was grey and splintered. The iron rim was solid rust, and the wood was full of wormholes. A few flakes of paint still clung to it, but too few to suggest a sigil.
"M'lord," said Dunk. The Osgreys had not been lords for centuries, yet it pleased Sir Eustace to be styled so, echoing as it did the past glories of his house.
"What is it?"
"The little lion's shield."
The old man rubbed at the rim, and some flakes of rust came off.
"Sir Wilbert Osgrey bore this at the battle where he died. I'm sure you know the tale."
"No, my lord," said Bennis. "We don't, as it happens. The little lion, did you say? What, was he a dwarf or some such?"
"Certainly not." The old knight's moustache quivered. "Sir Wilbert was a tall and powerful man, and a great knight. The name was given him in childhood as the youngest of 5 brothers. In his day, there were still 7 kings in the 7 kingdoms, and Highgarden and the Rock were oft at war. The Green Kings ruled us then, the Gardeners. They were of the blood of old Garth Greenhand, and a green hand upon a white field was their kingly banner. Giles the 3rd took his banners east to war against the Storm King, and Wilbert's brothers all went with him, for in those days the Checky Lion always flew beside the Green Hand when the King of the Reach went forth to battle. Yet it happened that while King Giles was away, the King of the Rock saw his chance to tear a bite out of the Reach, so he gathered up a host of Westermen and came down upon us. The Osgreys were the marshals of the North March, so it fell to the little lion to meet them. It was the 4th King Lancel who led the Lannisters, it seems to me, or mayhaps the 5th. Sir Wilbert blocked King Lancel's path and bid him halt. "Come no farther," he said. "You are not wanted here. I forbid you to set foot upon the Reach." But the Lannister ordered all his banners forward. They fought for 30 days, the Gold Lion and the Checky. The Lannister was armed with a Valyrian sword that no common steel can match, so the little lion was hard-pressed, his shield in ruins. In the end, bleeding from 12 grievous wounds, with his own blade broken in his hand, he threw himself headlong at his foe. King Lancel cut him near in half, the singers say. But as he died, the little lion found the gap in the king's armor beneath his arm and plunged his dagger home. When their king died, the Westermen turned back, and the Reach was saved.
The old man stroked the broken shield as tenderly as if it had been a child.
"Aye, my lord," Bennis croaked. "We could use a man like that today. Dunk and me had a look at your stream, my lord. Dry as a bone, and not from no drought."
The old man set the shield aside.
"Tell me."
He took a seat and indicated that they should do the same. As the brown knight launched into the tale, he sat listening intently, with his chin up and his shoulders back, as upright as a lance. In his youth, Sir Eustace Osgrey must have been the very picture of chivalry, tall and broad and handsome. Time and grief had worked their will on him, but he was still unbent, a big-boned, broad-shouldered, barrel-chested man with features as strong and sharp as some old eagle. His close-cropped hair had gone white as milk, but the thick moustache that hid his mouth remained an ashy grey. His eyebrows were the same colour, the eyes beneath a paler shade of grey, and full of sadness. They seemed to grow sadder still when Bennis touched upon the dam.
"That stream has been known as the Checky Water for 1,000 years or more," the old knight said. "I caught fish there as a boy, and my sons all did the same. Alison liked to splash in the shallows on hot summer days like this."
Alison had been his daughter, who had perished in the spring.
"It was on the banks of the Checky Water that I kissed a girl for the first time. A cousin, she was, my uncle's youngest daughter of the Osgreys of Leafy Lake. They are all gone now, even her."
His moustache quivered.
"This cannot be borne, sirs. The woman will not have my water. She will not have my Checky Water."
"Dam's built strong, my lord," Sir Bennis warned. "Too strong for me and Sir Dunk to pull down in an hour, even with the bald-head boy to help. We'll need ropes and picks and axes and 12 men, and that's just for the work, not for the fighting."
Sir Eustace stared at the little lion's shield. Dunk cleared his throat.
"My lord, as to that, when we came upon the diggers, well..."
"Dunk, don't trouble my lord with trifles," said Bennis.
I taught one fool a lesson, that was all.
Sir Eustace looked up sharply.
What sort of lesson? With my sword, as it were. A little claret on his cheek, that's all it were, my lord.
The old knight looked long at him.
That was ill-considered, sir. The woman has a spider's heart. She murdered three of her husbands, and all her brothers died in swaddling clothes. Five there were, or six, mayhaps, I don't recall. They stood between her and the castle. She would whip the skin off any peasant who displeased her, I do not doubt, but for you to cut one. No, she will not suffer such an insult. Make no mistake. She will come for you, as she came for Lem.
Take, my lord, Sir Bennis said. Begging your lordly pardon, you knew him, and I never did, but his name were Dake.
If it please, my lord, I could go to Golden Grove and tell Lord Rowan of this dam, said Dunk. Rowan was the old knight's liege lord. The Red Widow held her lands of him as well.
Rowan? No, look for no help there. Lord Rowan's sister wed Lord Wyman's cousin Wendell, so he is kin to the Red Widow. Besides, he loves me not. Sir Duncan, on the morrow you must make the rounds of all my villages and roust out every able-bodied man of fighting age. I am old, but I am not dead. The woman will soon find that the Checky Lion still has claws.
Two, Dunk thought glumly, and I am one of them. Sir Eustace's lands supported three small villages, none more than a handful of hovels, sheepfolds, and pigs. The largest boasted a thatched, one-room sept with crude pictures of the Severn scratched upon the walls in charcoal. Mudge, a stoop-backed old swineherd who'd once been to Old Town, led devotions there every seventh day. Twice a year, a real septon came through to forgive sins in the mother's name. The small folk were glad of the forgiveness, but hated the septon's visits all the same, since they were required to feed him. They seemed no more pleased by the sight of Dunk and Egg. Dunk was known in the villages, if only as Sir Eustace's new knight, but not so much as a cup of water was offered him. Most of the men were in the field, so it was largely women and children who crept out of the hovels at their coming, along with a few grandfathers, too infirm for work. Egg bore the osprey banner, the Checky Lion, green and gold, rampant upon its field of white.
"We come from Standfast with Sir Eustace's summons," Dunk told the villagers. "Every able-bodied man between the ages of 15 and 50 is commanded to assemble at the tower on the morrow."
"Is it war?"
asked one thin woman, with two children hiding behind her shirts and a babe sucking at her breast.
"Is the black dragon come again?"
"There are no dragons in this, black or red," Dunk told her. "This is between the Checky Lion and the spiders. The Red Widow has taken your water."
The woman nodded, though she looked askance when Egg took off his hat to fan his face.
"That boy got no hair. He's sick."
"It's shaved," said Egg. He put the hat back on, turned Maester's head, and rode off slowly. The boy is in a prickly mood today. He had hardly said a word since they set out. Dunk gave Thunder a touch of the spur and soon caught the mule.
"Are you angry that I did not take your part against Sir Bennis yesterday?" he asked his sullen squire as they made for the next village. "I like the man no more than you, but he is a knight. You should speak to him with courtesy."
"I'm your squire, not his," the boy said. "He's dirty and mean-mouthed, and he pinches me."
"If he had an inkling who you were, he'd piss himself before he laid a finger on you." "He used to pinch me, too."
Dunk had forgotten that till Egg's words brought it back.
Sir Bennis and Sir Arlan had been among a party of knights hired by a Dornish merchant to see him safe from Lannisport to the Prince's Pass. Dunk had been no older than Egg, though taller. "He would pinch me under the arm, so hard he'd leave a bruise. His fingers felt like iron pincers, but I never told Sir Arlan." One of the other knights had vanished near Stony Sept, and it was bruited about that Bennis had gutted him in a quarrel.
"If he pinches you again, tell me, and I'll end it. Till then it does not cost you much to tend his horse."
"Someone has to," Egg agreed. "Bennis never brushes him. He never cleans his stall. He hasn't even named him."
"Some knights never name their horses," Dunk told him.
That way, when they die in battle, the grief is not so hard to bear. There are always more horses to be had, but it's hard to lose a faithful friend. Or so the old man said, but he never took his own counsel. He named every horse he ever owned. So had Dunk. We'll see how many men turn up at the tower. But whether it's 5 or 50, you'll need to do for them as well. Egg looked indignant.
I have to serve small folk.
Not serve. Help. We need to turn them into fighters. If the widow gives us time enough. If the gods are good, a few will have done some soldiering before, but most will be green as summer grass, more used to holding hoes than spears. Even so, a day may come when our lives depend on them. How old were you when you first took up a sword?
I was little, sir. The sword was made from wood.
Common boys fight with wooden swords, too, only theirs are sticks and broken branches. Egg, these men may seem fools to you. They won't know the proper names for bits of armor, or the arms of the great houses, or which king it was who abolished the lord's right to the first knight, but treat them with respect all the same. You are a squire born of noble blood, but you are still a boy. Most of them will be men grown. A man has his pride, no matter how low-born he may be. He would seem just as lost and stupid in their villages. And if you doubt that, go hoe a row and shear a sheep, and tell me the names of all the weeds and wildflowers in Watts Wood. The boy considered for a moment.
I could teach them the arms of the great houses, and how Queen Alison convinced King Jahiris to abolish the first knight. And they could teach me which weeds are best for making poisons, and whether those green berries are safe to eat.
They could, Dunk agreed. But before you get to King Jahiris, you'd best help us teach them how to use a spear. And don't go eating anything that Maester won't. The next day, a dozen would-be warriors found their way to Standfast to assemble among the chickens. One was too old, two were too young, and one skinny boy turned out to be a skinny girl. Those Dunk sent back to their villages, leaving 8. 3 Watts, 2 Wills, a Lem, a Pate, and Big Rob, the Lackwit. A sorry lot, he could not help but think. The strapping handsome peasant boys who won the hearts of high-born maidens in the songs were nowhere to be seen. Each man was dirtier than the last. Lem was 50 if he was a day, and Pate had weepy eyes. They were the only two who had ever soldiered before. Both had been gone with Sir Eustace and his sons to fight in the Blackfyre Rebellion. The other 6 were as green as Dunk had feared. All 8 had lice. 2 of the Watts were brothers.
Guess your mother didn't know no other name, Bennis said, cackling.
As far as arms went, they brought a scythe, 3 hoes, an old knife, some stout wooden clubs. Lem had a sharpened stick that might serve for a spear, and one of the Wills allowed that he was good at chucking rocks.
Well and good, Bennis said. We got us a bloody trebuchet.
After that, the man was known as Treb. Are any of you skilled with a longbow? Dunk asked them. The men scuffed at the dirt, while hens pecked the ground around them. Pate of the weepy eyes finally answered,
Begging your pardon, sir, but my lord don't permit us longbows. Osgray Deers is for the Checky Lions, not the likes of us.
We will get swords and helms and chainmail, the youngest of the 3 Watts wanted to know.
Why, sure you will, said Bennis. Just as soon as you kill one of the widow's knights and strip his bloody corpse. Make sure you stick your arm up his horse's arse, too. That's where you'll find his silver.
He pinched young Watt beneath his arm until the lad squealed in pain, then marched the whole lot of them off to Watt's Wood to cut some spears. When they came back, they had 8 fire-hardened spears of wildly unequal length and crude shields of woven branches. Sir Bennis had made himself a spear as well, and he showed them how to thrust with the point and use the shaft to parry, and where to put the point to kill.
The belly and the throat are best, I find.
He pounded his fist against his chest.
Right, there's the heart. That will do the job as well. Trouble is, the ribs is in the way. The belly's nice and soft, gutting slow but certain. Never knew a man to live when his guts was hanging out. Now, if some fool goes and turns his back on you, put your point between his shoulder blades or through his kidney. That's here. They don't live long once you prick him in the kidney.
Having 3 Watts in the company caused confusion when Bennis was trying to tell them what to do.
We should give them village names, sir, Egg suggested. like Sir Arlan of Penitree, your old master.
That might have worked, only their villages had no names either.
Well, said Egg, we could call them for their crops, sir.
One village sat amongst bean fields, one planted mostly barley corn, and the third cultivated rows of cabbages, carrots, onions, turnips, and melons. No one wanted to be a cabbage or a turnip, so the last lot became the melons. They ended up with 4 barleycorns, 2 melons, and 2 beans. As the brothers Watt were both barleycorns, some further distinction was required. When the younger brother made mention of once having fallen down the village well, Bennis dubbed him Wet Watt, and that was that. The men were thrilled to have been given lords' names, save for Big Rob, who could not seem to remember whether he was a bean or a barleycorn. Once all of them had names and spears, Sir Eustace emerged from Standfast to address them. The old knight stood outside the tower door, wearing his mail and plate beneath a long woolen surcoat that age had turned more yellow than white. On front and back it bore the checky lion sewn in little squares of green and gold.
"Lads," he said, "you all remember Dake. The Red Widow threw him in a sack and drowned him. She took his life, and now she thinks to take our water, too. The checky water that nourishes our crops. But she will not."
He raised his sword above his head.
"For Osgray," he said ringingly, "for Standfast."
"Osgray,"
Dunk echoed. Egg and the recruits took up the shout.
"Osgray, Osgray, for Standfast."
Dunk and Bennis drilled the little company amongst the pigs and chickens, while Sir Eustace watched from the balcony above. Sam Stoops had stuffed some old sacks with soiled straw. Those became their foes. The recruits began practicing their spear work as Bennis bellowed at them.
"Stick and twist and rip it free! Stick and twist and rip! But get the damned thing out! You'll be wanting it soon enough for the next one. Too slow, Treb! Too damned slow! If you can't do it quicker, go back to chucking rocks! Lem! Get your weight behind your thrust. There's a boy. And in and out, and in and out. Fuck 'em with it, that's the way. In and out, rip 'em, rip 'em, rip 'em."
When the sacks had been torn to pieces by 6,500 spear thrusts, and all the straw spilled out onto the ground, Dunk donned his mail and plate, and took up a wooden sword to see how the men would fare against a livelier foe. "Not too well," was the answer. Only Treb was quick enough to get a spear past Dunk's shield, and he only did it once. Dunk turned one clumsy, lurching thrust after another, pushed their spears aside, and bulled in close. If his sword had been steel instead of pine, he would have slain each of them 6 times. "You're dead once I get past your point," he warned them, hammering at their legs and arms to drive the lesson home. Treb and Lem and Wet Watt soon learned how to give ground, at least. Big Rob dropped his spear and ran, and Bennis had to chase him down and drag him back in tears. The end of the afternoon saw the lot of them all bruised and battered, with fresh blisters rising on their calloused hands from where they gripped the spears. Dunk bore no marks himself, but he was half drowned by sweat by the time Egg helped him peel his armor off. As the sun was going down, Dunk marched their little company down into the cellar and forced them all to have a bath, even those who'd had one just last winter. Afterward, Sam Stoop's wife had bowls of stew for all, thick with carrots, onions, and barley. The men were bone-tired, but to hear them talk, every one would soon be twice as deadly as a Kingsguard knight. They could hardly wait to prove their valor. Sir Bennis egged them on by telling them of the joys of the soldier's life, loot and women, chiefly. The two old hands agreed with him. Lem had brought back a knife and a pair of fine boots from the Black Fire Rebellion to hear him tell. The boots were too small for him to wear, but he had them hanging on his wall. And Pate could not say enough about some of the camp followers he'd known following the dragon. Sam Stoops had set them up with 8 straw pallets in the undercroft, so once their bellies were filled, they all went off to sleep. Bennis lingered long enough to give Dunk a look of disgust.
"Sir Useless should have fucked a few more peasant wenches while he still had a bit of sap left in them old sad balls of his," he said. "If he'd sown himself a nice crop of bastard boys back then, might be we'd have some soldiers now."
"They seem no worse than any other peasant levy." Dunk had marched with a few such while squiring for Sir Arlan.
"Aye," Sir Bennis said. "In a fortnight they might stand their own against some other lot of peasants. Knights, though?"
He shook his head and spat. Standfast's well was in the undercellar, in a dank chamber walled in stone and earth. It was there that Sam Stoop's wife soaked and scrubbed and beat the clothes before carrying them up to the roof to dry. The big stone washtub was also used for baths. Bathing required drawing water from the well, bucket by bucket, heating it over the hearth in a big iron kettle, emptying the kettle into the tub, then starting the whole process once again. It took 4 buckets to fill the kettle and 3 kettles to fill the tub. By the time the last kettle was hot, the water from the first had cooled to lukewarm. Sir Benes had been heard to say that the whole thing was too much bloody bother, which was why he crawled with lice and fleas, and smelled like a bad cheese. Dunk at least had Egg to help him when he felt in dire need of a good wash, as he did tonight. The lad drew the water in a glum silence and hardly spoke as it was heating.
"Egg?" Dunk asked as the last kettle was coming to a boil. "Is aught amiss?"
When Egg made no reply, he said, "Help me with the kettle."
Together they wrestled it from hearth to tub, taking care not to splash themselves.
"Sir," the boy said, "what do you think Sir Eustace means to do?"
"Tear down the dam and fight off the widow's men if they try to stop us."
He spoke loudly, so as to be heard above the splashing of the bathwater. Steam rose in a white curtain as they poured, bringing a flush to his face.
"Their shields are woven wood, sir. A lance could punch right through them, or a crossbow bolt."
"We may find some bits of armor for them when they're ready." That was the best they could hope for.
"They might be killed, sir. Wet Wat is still half a boy. Will Barleycorn is to be married the next time the Septon comes, and Big Rob doesn't even know his left foot from his right."
Dunk let the empty kettle thump down onto the hard-packed earthen floor.
Roger of Pennytree was younger than Wet Wat when he died on the red grass field. There were men in your father's host who'd been just married too, and other men who'd never even kissed a girl. There were hundreds who didn't know their left foot from their right, maybe thousands.
"That was different," Egg insisted. "That was war."
"So was this. The same thing, only smaller."
"Smaller and stupider, sir."
"That's not for you or me to say," Dunk told him. "It's their duty to go to war when Sir Eustace summons them, and to die, if need be."
"Then we shouldn't have named them, sir. It will only make the grief harder for us when they die."
He screwed up his face.
"If we used my boot..."
"No." Dunk stood on one leg to pull his own boot off.
"Yes, but my father..."
"No." The second boot went the way of the first.
"We..."
"No." Dunk pulled his sweat-stained tunic up over his head and tossed it at Egg.
"Ask Sam Stoop's wife to wash that for me."
"I will, sir, but..."
"No," I said. "Do you need a clout in the ear to help you hear better?"
He unlaced his breeches. Underneath was only him. It was too hot for small clothes.
"It's good that you're concerned for Wat and Wat and Wat and the rest of them. But the boot is only meant for dire need."
"How many eyes does Lord Bloodraven have? 1,000 eyes and 1.
"What did your father tell you when he sent you off to squire for me?"
"To keep my hair shaved or dyed, and tell no man my true name,"
the boy said, with obvious reluctance.
Egg had served Dunk for a good 1.5 years, though some days it seemed like 20. They'd climbed the Prince's Pass together and crossed the deep sands of Dawn, both red and white. A pole boat had taken them down the Green Blood to the Planky Town, where they took passage for Old Town on the galleass White Lady. They had slept in stables, inns and ditches, broken bread with holy brothers, whores and mummers, and chased down 100 puppet shows. Egg had kept Dunk's horse groomed, his longsword sharp, his mail free of rust. He had been as good a companion as any man could wish for, and the hedge knight had come to think of him almost as a little brother. He isn't, though. This Egg had been hatched of dragons, not of chickens. Egg might be a hedge knight squire, but Aegon of House Targaryen was the 4th and youngest son of Maekar, Prince of Summerhall, himself the 4th son of the late King Daeron the Good, the 2nd of his name, who'd sat the Iron Throne for 25 years, until the great spring sickness took him off. So far as most folk are concerned, Aegon Targaryen went back to Summerhall with his brother Daeron after the tourney at Ashford Meadow, Dunk reminded the boy. Your father did not want it known that you were wandering the 7 Kingdoms with some hedge knight. So let's hear no more about your boot.
A look was all the answer that he got.
Egg had big eyes, and somehow his shaven head made them look even larger. In the dimness of the lamplit cellar they looked black, but in better light their true color could be seen, deep and dark and purple. Valyrian eyes, thought Dunk. In Westeros, few but the blood of the dragon had eyes that color, or hair that shone like beaten gold and strands of silver woven all together. When they'd been poling down the green blood, the orphan girls had made a game of rubbing Egg's shaven head for luck. It made the boy blush redder than a pomegranate. "Girls are so stupid," he would say. "The next one who touches me is going into the river." Dunk had to tell him, "Then I'll be touching you. I'll give you such a clout in the ear, you'll be hearing bells for a moon's turn." That only goaded the boy to further insolence. "Better bells than stupid girls," he insisted. But he never threw anyone into the river. Dunk stepped into the tub and eased himself down until the water covered him up to his chin. It was still scalding hot on top, though cooler farther down. He clenched his teeth to keep from yelping. If he did, the boy would laugh. Egg liked his bath water scalding hot.
"Do you need more water boiled, sir?"
"This will serve." Dunk rubbed at his arms and watched the dirt come off in long grey clouds. "Fetch me the soap. Oh, and the long-handled scrub brush, too." Thinking about Egg's hair had made him remember that his own was filthy. He took a deep breath and slid down beneath the water to give it a good soak. When he emerged again, sloshing, Egg was standing beside the tub with the soap and long-handled horsehair brush in hand. "You have hairs on your cheek," Dunk observed as he took the soap from him. "Two of them. There, below your ear. Make sure you get them the next time you shave your head."
"I will, sir."
The boy seemed pleased by the discovery. No doubt he thinks a bit of beard makes him a man. Dunk had thought the same when he first found some fuzz growing on his upper lip. "I tried to shave with my dagger and almost nicked my nose off." "Go and get some sleep now," he told Egg. "I won't have any more need of you till morning." It took a long while to scrub all the dirt and sweat away. Afterward, he put the soap aside, stretched out as much as he was able, and closed his eyes. The water had cooled by then. After the savage heat of the day, it was a welcome relief. He soaked till his feet and fingers were all wrinkled up and the water had gone grey and cold, and only then reluctantly climbed out. Though he and Egg had been given thick straw pallets down in the cellar, Dunk preferred to sleep up on the roof. The air was fresher there, and sometimes there was a breeze. It was not as though he need have much fear of rain. The next time it rained on them up there would be the first. Egg was asleep by the time Dunk reached the roof. He lay on his back with his hands behind his head and stared up at the sky. The stars were everywhere, thousands and thousands of them. It reminded him of a night at Ashford Meadow before the tourney started. He had seen a falling star that night. Falling stars were supposed to bring you luck, so he told Tansel to paint it on his shield, but Ashford had been anything but lucky for him. Before the tourney ended, he had almost lost a hand and a foot, and three good men had lost their lives. "I gained a squire, though. Egg was with me when I rode away from Ashford. That was the only good thing to come of all that happened." He hoped that no stars fell tonight. There were red mountains in the distance and white sands beneath his feet. Dunk was digging, plunging a spade into the dry, hot earth and flinging the fine sand back over his shoulder. He was making a hole, a grave, he thought, a grave for hope. A trio of Dornish knights stood watching, making mock of him in quiet voices. Farther off, the merchants waited with their mules and wains and sand sledges. They wanted to be off, but he could not leave until he'd buried Chestnut. He would not leave his old friend to the snakes and scorpions and sand dogs. The Stot had died on the long thirsty crossing between the Prince's Pass and Vaith, with Egg upon his back. His front legs just seemed to fold up under him, and he knelt right down, rolled onto his side, and died. His carcass sprawled beside the hole. Already it was stiff. Soon it would begin to smell. Dunk was weeping as he dug, to the amusement of the Dornish knights. "Water is precious in the waste," one said. "You ought not to waste it, sir." The other chuckled and said, "Why do you weep? It was only a horse, and a poor one." Chestnut, Dunk thought, digging. His name was Chestnut, and he bore me on his back for years and never bucked or bit. The old stopped and looked a sorry thing beside the sleek sand steeds that the Dornishmen were riding, with their elegant heads, long necks, and flowing manes. But he had given all he had to give.
"Weeping for a sway-backed stot," Sir Arlen said, in his old man's voice. "Why, lad, you never wept for me, who put you on his back."
He gave a little laugh to show he meant no harm by the reproach.
"That's Dunk the Lunk, thick as a castle wall."
"He shed no tears for me either," said Baylor Breakspear from the grave. "Though I was his prince, the hope of Westeros, the gods never meant for me to die so young."
"My father was only 39," said Prince Velar. "He had it in him to be a great king, the greatest since Aegon the Dragon." He looked at Dunk with cool blue eyes. "Why would the gods take him and leave you?" The young prince had his father's light brown hair, but a streak of silver gold ran through it.
"You are dead," Dunk wanted to scream. "You are all three dead. Why won't you leave me be?"
Sir Arlen had died of a chill. Prince Baylor, of the blow his brother dealt him during Dunk's trial of 7, his son Velar during the great spring sickness. "I am not to blame for that. We were in Dorne. We never even knew."
"You are mad," the old man told him. "We will dig no hole for you when you kill yourself with this folly. In the deep sands a man must hoard his water."
"Begone with you, Sir Duncan," Velar said. "Begone." Egg helped him with the digging. The boy had no spade, only his hands, and the sand flowed back into the grave as fast as they could fling it out. It was like trying to dig a hole in the sea. "I have to keep digging," Dunk told himself, though his back and shoulders ached from the effort. "I have to bury him, down deep where the sand dogs cannot find him. I have to..."
"Die,"
said Big Rob, the simpleton, from the bottom of the grave. Lying there, so still and cold, with a ragged red wound gaping in his belly, he did not look very big at all. Dunk stopped and stared at him. "You're not dead. You're down sleeping in the cellar." He looked to Sir Arlen for help.
"Tell him, sir," he pleaded. "Tell him to get out of the grave."
Only it was not Sir Arlen of Penitree standing over him at all. It was Sir Bennis of the Brown Shield. The Brown Knight only cackled.
"Dunk the Lunk," he said. "Gutting slow, but certain. Never knew a man to live with his entrails hanging out."
Red froth bubbled on his lips. He turned and spat, and the white sands drank it down. Treb was standing behind him with an arrow in his eye, weeping slow red tears. And there was Wet Wat, too, his head cut near in half, with old Lem and red-eyed Pate and all the rest. They had all been chewing sow leaf with Bennis, Dunk thought at first, but then he realized that it was blood trickling from their mouths. Dead, he thought, all dead, and the Brown Knight brayed.
"Aye, so best get busy. You've more graves to dig, Lunk. 8 for them, and 1 for me, and 1 for old Sir Useless, and 1 last one for your bald-head boy."
The spade slipped from Dunk's hands.
"Egg!" he cried. "Run! We have to run!"
But the sands were giving way beneath their feet. When the boy tried to scramble from the hole, its crumbling sides gave way and collapsed. Dunk saw the sands wash over Egg, burying him as he opened his mouth to shout. He tried to fight his way to him, but the sands were rising all around him, pulling him down into the grave, filling his mouth, his nose, his eyes. Come the break of day, Sir Bennis set about teaching their recruits to form a shield wall. He lined the 8 of them up, shoulder to shoulder, with their shields touching and their spear points poking through like long, sharp wooden teeth. Then Dunk and Egg mounted up and charged them. Maester refused to go within 10 feet of the spears and stopped abruptly, but Thunder had been trained for this. The big warhorse pounded straight ahead, gathering speed. Hens ran beneath his legs and flapped away, screeching. Their panic must have been contagious. Once more, Big Rob was the first to drop his spear and run, leaving a gap in the middle of the wall. Instead of closing up, Standfast's other warriors joined the flight. Thunder trod upon their discarded shields before Dunk could rein him up. Woven branches cracked and splintered beneath his iron-shod hooves. Sir Bennis rattled off a pungent string of curses as chickens and peasants scattered in all directions. Egg fought manfully to hold his laughter in, but finally lost the battle.
"Enough of that.
Dunk drew Thunder to a halt, unfastened his helm, and tore it off.
If they do that in a battle, it will get a whole lot of them killed.
And you and me as well, most like. The morning was already hot, and he felt as soiled and sticky as if he'd never bathed at all. His head was pounding, and he could not forget the dream he dreamed the night before. It never happened that way, he tried to tell himself. It wasn't like that. Chestnut had died on the long, dry ride to Vaith. That part was true. He and Egg rode double until Egg's brother gave them Maester. The rest of it, though, I never wept. I might have wanted to, but I never did. He had wanted to bury the horse as well, but the Dornishman would not wait. "Sand dogs must eat and feed their pups," one of the Dornish knights told him as he helped Dunk strip the stot of saddle and bridle. "His flesh will feed the dogs or feed the sands. In a year his bones will be scoured clean. This is Dorn, my friend." Remembering, Dunk could not help but wonder who would feed on Watt's flesh and Watt's and Watt's. Maybe there are Checky fish down beneath the Checky water. He rode Thunder back to the tower and dismounted. "Egg, help Sir Bennis round them up and get them back here." He shoved his helm at Egg and strode to the steps. Sir Eustace met him in the dimness of his solar.
"That was not well done."
"No, my lord," said Dunk. "They will not serve. A sworn sword owes his liege service and obedience, but this is madness."
"It was their first time. Their fathers and brothers were as bad or worse when they began their training. My sons worked with them before we went to help the king. Every day, for a good fortnight, they made soldiers of them."
"And when the battle came, my lord?" Dunk asked.
"How did they fare then? How many of them came home with you?"
The old knight looked long at him.
"Lem,"
he said at last,
"and Pate,
and Dake.
Dake foraged for us.
He was as fine a forager as I ever knew. We never marched on empty bellies. 3 came back, sir. 3 and me."
His moustache quivered.
"It may take longer than a fortnight."
"My lord," said Dunk,
"the woman could be here upon the morrow with all her men."
"They are good lads," he thought, "but they will soon be dead lads if they go up against the knights of Coldmoat. There must be some other way."
"Some other way?"
Sir Eustace ran his fingers lightly across the little lion's shield.
"I will have no justice from Lord Rowan, nor this king."
He grasped Dunk by the forearm.
"It comes to me that in days gone by, when the Green Kings ruled, you could pay a man a blood price if you had slain one of his animals or peasants."
"A blood price?" Dunk was dubious.
"Some other way," you said. "I have some coin laid by. It was only a little claret on the cheek, Sir Bennis says. I could pay the man a silver stag and 3 to the woman for the insult. I could and would, if she would take the dam down."
The old man frowned.
"I cannot go to her, however. Not at Coldmoat."
A fat black fly buzzed round his head and lighted on his arm.
"The castle was ours once. Did you know that, Sir Duncan?"
"Aye, my lord,"
Sam Stoops had told him.
"For 1,000 years before the conquest, we were the marshals of the North March. A score of lesser lordlings did us fealty, and 100 landed knights. We had 4 castles then, and watch towers on the hills to warn of the coming of our enemies. Coldmoat was the greatest of our seats. Lord Perwin Osgray raised it. Perwin the Proud, they called him. After the Field of Fire, Highgarden passed from kings to stewards, and the Osgrays dwindled and diminished. 'Twas Aegon's son, King Maegor, who took Coldmoat from us when Lord Ormond Osgray spoke out against his suppression of the Stars and Swords, as the poor fellows and the warriors' sons were called.'"
His voice had grown hoarse.
"There is a Checky lion carved into the stone above the gates of Coldmoat. My father showed it to me, the first time he took me with him to call on old Reynard Webber. I showed it to my own sons in turn. Adam served at Coldmoat as a page and squire, and a certain fondness grew up between him and Lord Wyman's daughter.
So one winter day I donned my richest raiment and went to Lord Wyman to propose a marriage. His refusal was courteous, but as I left, I heard him laughing with Sir Lucas Inchfield. I never returned to Coldmoat after that, save once, when that woman presumed to carry off one of mine own. When they told me to seek for poor Lem at the bottom of the moat.
Dake, said Dunk. Bennis says his name was Dake.
Dake?
The fly was creeping down his sleeve, pausing to rub its legs together the way flies did. Sir Eustace shooed it away and rubbed his lip beneath his moustache.
Dake. That was what I said. A staunch fellow, I recall him well. He foraged for us during the war. We never marched on empty bellies. When Sir Lucas informed me of what had been done to my poor Dake, I swore a holy vow that I would never set foot inside that castle again, unless to take possession. So you see, I cannot go there, Sir Duncan, not to pay the blood price, or for any other reason. I cannot.
Dunk understood.
I could go, my lord. I swore no vows. You are a good man, Sir Duncan, a brave knight and true.
Sir Eustace gave Dunk's arm a squeeze.
Would that the gods had spared my Alison. You are the sort of man I had always hoped that she might marry. A true knight, Sir Duncan. A true knight.
Dunk was turning red. I will tell Lady Webber what you said about the blood price, but
you will save Sir Bennis from Dake's fate. I know it. I am no mean judge of men, and you are the true steel. You will give them pause, sir, the very sight of you. When that woman sees that Standfast has such a champion, she may well take down that dam of her own accord.
Dunk did not know what to say to that. He knelt.
My lord, I will go upon the morrow, and do the best I can. On the morrow!
The fly came circling back, and lit upon Sir Eustace's left hand. He raised his right and smashed it flat.
Yes! On the morrow...